Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the podcast where we help you accelerate your personal development, solve life's challenges, and get to a beautiful place through deeper connection to yourself and every aspect of your life. A big shout out today to our listeners in Budapest, Hungary. Very cool. That's a new country for us, so I'm so excited to have you on board. Thanks for joining us. So today we're going to be talking about a lot of things. We're going to start off by talking about the relationship between attachment and expectation. So let's start here. And then we're going to talk about a couple of really cool life hacks that I use to do a couple of things. One to retrain my brain, and then another one quite separately for avoiding overwhelming my attention. Because sometimes it is fun to be busy, so how do you not overwhelm your attention? So let's start with the relationship between attachment and expectation. So attachment, the Buddhists would say, is the source of all suffering. Well, what does that mean? That means if you're miserable, it's probably because you're attached to something. Okay, what does that mean? What does this mean? And attachment can mean several things I've talked about before, but this time I want to talk about how you can recognize attachment, the attachment that's causing your misery, by identifying expectation. Attachment is not connection. And this is what we've talked about before, right? Connection is something we're pushing for, connection. When you're pushing for connection, you're in great danger of becoming attached instead of connected. Attachment is sort of one way. And we've talked about that before. You can check that out. So if attachment is not connection, then what is it? I suspect that it might be expectation. Or at least that expectation is a component of attachment. If you're attached to a person, you expect something from them. You may expect them to make you feel a certain way, or you may expect them to solve your problems. You may expect them to love you forever. You may be disappointed. If you're attached to a thing, you may expect that thing to comfort you, or you may expect that that thing will never break. So attachment to things and people causes such pain precisely because we're placing our hopes and dreams on these external people and things, that we expect the future with those people and things to look a certain way. Expectation is out in the future. You think you know what your future looks like, and then it doesn't, and you suffer. Because you had expectation that it would be a certain way. And your expectation was about that person or that place or that thing. So this external expectation leads to disappointment and pain. That's the suffering that they're speaking about. Because after all, these people and these things and these places, they can't bring us comfort or joy. Only we can bring that to ourselves. You expect these people and things to make you happy, but only you can uncover your happiness from within. If you're expecting this person to make you happy, why aren't you already happy by yourself? Why aren't you complete unto yourself? What have you without joy? What have you to give to them? Why do you need a thing to comfort you? Why is there not comfort within you? If we're looking from things from the outside, we're looking for external things to make us feel a certain way, it's because we're not entirely complete or connected to ourselves on the inside. Connection has no expectations. Connection is here and now. It's not in the future. That's the difference. Connection with a person is about connecting to their truth and their reality right now in this moment, not expecting something from them in the future. See the difference? Connection is fully accepting of what is, and it does not judge. So ask yourself, if you're wondering if you might be attached to a person or a thing instead of connected to it, what do you expect from this person or thing? And if you have an answer to that question, right? So if you're wondering if you're attached, you want to test for whether or not you're attached. Test for whether or not you have expectations. If you have expectations, you are attached and you are guaranteed misery in the future. That's what you can expect. So if you find that you do have some attachment, that you do have expectations of a person or a place or a thing, and you say, I don't want to be attached to this thing or this person, I want to be connected. Can you eliminate your expectations? Because if you can eliminate your expectations, really, truly, get rid of them and don't expect anything from that person, place, or thing in the future. That doesn't mean you don't love them. It doesn't mean they're not special. It means that you're freeing them from the trap of your expectations. If you can eliminate your expectations, you will eliminate your attachment and you will make room for connection to grow instead. So attachment is poisonous. Connection is healing, and you're going to replace something bad with something good. So there you go. That's the test. So if you have expectations for a person, place, or thing, that means you have attachment and you are headed for misery. If you're not already there, if you find that you are miserable, ask yourself what you were expecting and what person, place, or thing you were expecting it from that you didn't get. And can you let go of that and seek that within yourself instead? That is the key. Very, very useful. That one has been a huge help to me. All right, so that was a fun one. So attachment and expectation is terribly useful. And think about that in terms of when you find yourself down and how you might could turn that around. So let's talk about a couple of useful hacks. Retraining your brain. So retraining your brain is something, this is something that you want to do, check up and retrain quite frequently in the beginning. And there are ideas on how to do this on the website, of course, in the observation section. But one way that I've found recently that I just love is spaced repetition flashcards. And so there are a lot of apps out there, and most people think of them as something you use for language learning, which they are phenomenal for language learning. They have really, really amped up my language learning. And so spaced repetition is a concept where you're trying to memorize something. You're trying to permanently lock it into your brain. And what the research shows is that if you review it at very specific intervals, basically right before you're about to forget it, don't review it every day necessarily, but review it right before you're about to forget it, then you will lock it into long-term memory permanently after, you know, X number of reviews. There's a wonderful recount of the research and the data and an explanation, just the best explanation I've ever seen, in a book called Fluent Forever. If you're into language learning, you need to read this book. Fluent Forever. Really, really wonderful book. But in there, they talk about spaced repetition systems. That's the book that turned me on to spaced repetition for learning languages that really became the basis of my ability to learn 8 new languages simultaneously, which is something I'm still working on. And it's tons of fun, and I just absolutely adore it. It puts the fun in it and takes the drudgery out. So I went nuts with spaced repetition. Anything, absolutely anything that you need to practice and lock into long term, it's perfect for. You can use spaced repetition to retrain your brain. So if you have limiting beliefs you're trying to get rid of, and you want to have new beliefs that you program into your brain, put them into spaced repetition flashcards. And the flashcard system will tell you when to review it. So you don't have to think about it. It's going to alert you that you need to go review your cards today. And so you do. And it will automatically space them in the right intervals for you. You don't even have to think about it. It's great. And most of them use what's called a Leitner system, but you can read about that in Fluent Forever or online. So that's what I love it for, retraining my brain. So I have a set of cards in my, they call them an SRS, a spaced repetition system. I am a huge fan of the app Studies. Many language learners like the app Anki. I'm sure it's great, but they charge a huge fee for mobile devices, so I didn't get that one because I'm cheap. And there you have it. But I love Studies. Studies is free for mobile devices, and they charge for laptop. I wish I had this thing when I, you know, existed when I was in high school or in college, but I use it for everything now. So I have a set of flashcards in my Studies app for life philosophy, things I want to make sure that I don't forget, major lessons I don't want to forget. I have another stack of cards in my Studies app, in my SRS, for music, to remind me to practice certain songs so that at any moment I can pull out a guitar and play a specific song. And it reminds me when to practice, right? So this is good for physical skills too. I have another stack of flashcards in my SRS for dance. I'm taking dance lessons, salsa, bachata. And so I don't want to forget. I want to practice in between sessions. But sometimes you kind of forget because the lessons move on to newer material, and if you forget to practice the old material, you'll lose it. So I have cards in there for each maneuver, each spin, or each basic step, or each new move that we learn, and it reminds us when to practice each move. So music, dance, life philosophy, retraining your brain, language, obviously, language learning, anything you want to learn. You could use this to get ahead in college, in high school, right? When you need to memorize things for tests. What if maybe you're just in your business life, in your career, and there are facts and figures that you need to memorize and have at hand, and that would make you look really good and help you get ahead in your career? You could use it for that. How about people? Do you have a hard time remembering people's names and certain facts about them? You could use that. So the next time you see them at a party, you can go, hey, how's that book coming along? Or, hey, I remember your son runs track. How's that going? There's all kinds of stuff you can use this for. So branch way out. Go get yourself a spaced repetition system. I love Studies because it's so completely configurable. There's a little bit of a learning curve with it, but you'll figure it out. You can turn it into anything you want. And so that's why it's particularly good for anything, not just language. So I absolutely love it. So spaced repetition systems, good for everything, for retraining your brain and absolutely anything else that you're learning. If you're learning anything right now, go get a spaced repetition system and use it. Okay, the other little life hack I have for you is sometimes it's fun to have a lot of different things going on. Sometimes it's fun to be busy. Sometimes maybe you want to be busy. And sometimes being busy is really stressful and depleting. So what's the difference? right? So, what's the difference between busy being fun and busy being stressful and depleting? And it's all in how your tasks are arranged and how they play off of each other. So they're like rocks in the river of your life. They can make the ride swift, exciting, and fun, or they can block your flow completely and even put you in danger. So what I find is that related efforts that feed each other tend to be less stressful than the same number of unrelated efforts. Now, why is that? Because every effort continuously takes up part of your attention, even if it only sporadically takes up part of your time. Right? You may not be working on it this week, but it's still sucking up part of your attention. So related efforts often share a single space in your attention, whereas unrelated efforts take up separate spaces in your attention. So let me give you an example. There are a bunch of rooms in my house that need to be fixed up, painted, cleaned out, whatever. But they all occupy a single space in my attention under the heading of remodeling or painting, right? It's one thing, even though it's a bunch of rooms that need it. It's only one thing in my attention. Likewise, there's several songs that I want to record, but they all occupy the same space in my attention under the heading of recording. So, as opposed to each individual song taking my attention, it takes a little subspace instead under a bigger heading. But remodeling and recording take up completely separate spaces because they're unrelated. They don't have anything to do with each other. So, in my opinion, conscious attention and working memory are the same thing. I could be wrong there, but I'm going to use them interchangeably. It's a space in your mind where you continually track issues and tasks and concepts for very near-term use, is what I would say, right? So when I say your conscious attention or your working memory, it's a space in your mind where you track issues and tasks and concepts for very near-term use. Now, studies have shown that we have, on average, space for 7 things in our working memory, with an actual average being somewhere between 4 and 10. But for most of us, our physical selves and our current situation in the moment and the kids in the family take up at least 3 to 5 of those, leaving us with an average, on average, of 4, just 4 spots to track things like what we need from the grocery today or that project at work. And we know that we shouldn't overload ourselves, but even if you've succeeded in decluttering your time and attention, which we've talked about before, you run the risk of overloading yourself with all the exciting and fun things that you personally want to do. And who can blame you? There's so many cool things out there to try. And then you find yourself overloaded not only in your time, but in your attention. And when this happens, it's once again time to reprioritize and cut back. But this time, consider pruning the types of things you're involved in, rather than just the number of things you're involved in. There may be certain types of things you're involved in that can lump together into one space in your attention and not seem so overwhelming. You can have a happily busy schedule without feeling overloaded in your attention. So how will you choose to focus? So I have a very small number of headings of things, types of things that I want to spend my, that I'm going to spend my time on. It's a conscious choice. But within those types, within those categories, maybe many, many things. But I can reduce that feeling of overwhelming by kind of grouping similar things like remodeling or recording. Okay, so that's the hack. You can be busy and not feel overwhelmed, and you can enjoy it if you make sure that you don't have too many different types of activities. And you keep those down to whatever number makes you feel the way that you want to feel. All right, that's enough for today. If you have questions, thoughts, and ideas, you can send them into questions@koabd.com, or you can click through, use the podcast notes right below here, and click on the link and go over to the community page and use the form there. Just scroll down a little bit, you'll find the form there. You can send in your questions and thoughts. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm so excited that you were here. And as always, I'm wishing you, Purna Asati, complete connection.